Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's my great pleasure to welcome today's program Tom Kaczynski, who is VP Solution Strategy at JDA Software. And today we're going to talk about, are your labor management capabilities aligned with your omnichannel strategy? Now, there's obviously omnichannel has been a hot topic in the industry over the past couple of years, not only for retailers, but everyone in the ecosystem, you know, manufacturers, you know, suppliers to retailers, 3PLs as well. So it's really something that is, you know, impacting, you know, the supply chain logistics strategies of companies across a wide variety of industries. And one of the areas that really hasn't been discussed much, at least I haven't seen it as much, is really the impact on labor and labor management strategies and what's happening, particularly at the warehouse level with warehouse labor, you know, as companies try to align their omnichannel strategies with their labor management strategies. So that's the topic we're really going to kind of dive into today with Tom, and certainly Tom is an expert in this area. He's been around the industry. Tom and I know each other for many, many years, and certainly happy that he's able to join us today. You know, just a reminder that, you know, part of our goal here at Talking Logistics is to make this conversational. So as Tom and I are having our conversation, if you have a question for Tom, you can do so via the submit a question button or via the chat feature, and I'll keep an eye on that. And you know, if we have time and it's a good and appropriate question, I'll go ahead and weave it into the conversation. And finally, if you are joining us as a visitor, you do have to sign in first before you can ask a question. So with that, Tom, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So Tom, as a first-time guest here on Talking Logistics, I always like to ask my guests, you know, before we dive into the conversation, just to get a sense of, you know, how and why you got into this industry to begin with. So why don't you briefly tell us a little bit about your career path? You know, how and why did you get involved with supply chain logistics, and what's your current role and responsibilities there at JDA?
Well, thanks. I appreciate the opportunity. Actually, I think it's kind of humorous how I ended up in this industry in the first place. I've been in warehousing logistics for about 46 years now, which means I guess I'm an old man to start with that concept. But I'm also a third generation Teamster. I grew up in Chicago and I worked in a Teamster-driven union shop warehouse. And my father and my grandfather were both truck drivers in the Chicago area. So we're flying the flag for the union base within our family. I started in warehousing back in 69 for a distribution center in Chicago, and then spent the next 18 years working as a warehouse worker, group leader, supervisor, and manager. And then after that, I jumped over to the software side in the mid to late 80s, and I've been there ever since. I'm currently with JDA, which... In September of this year, it'll actually be my 20th year anniversary with the product that I'm representing with JDA. If you remember, over the years, that was with name changes and acquisitions, that WMS and Labor Solution used to be called Red Prairie, and in the early days, McHugh Freeman. So it's been around for a long, long time, and I've had the opportunity to share a lot of my experience with this product line and in this industry. I guess it's all I know. Can't teach an old dog new tricks. And it's been a great ride. It's never been more interesting and more growth impacted, I think, than it is right now.
So 40 plus years. So you started when you were 5 years old?
Thank you very much. How much? You'll have to let me know how much I owe you for saying that. But no, I started coming right out of high school in 69, starting in a warehouse. But, you know, I like to say I started in the computer industry in 1969, because when I started, my first job was I was a bin stocker, where you brought one box or two boxes to a shelf rack with a two-wheeler. And what I had was a staple gun, a magic marker to write the numbers on, and then what we used for the cards were those old computer punch cards. So even back in 69, Adrian, I was part of the computer industry, and that I used punch cards to write down names and numbers of locations and products and staple them to a box before I put it in the bin. That's how I got started.
That's great, Tom. I mean, and obviously coming from that beginning, if you will, to today, and kind of just the wealth of experience that you've had in this industry, you've seen a lot of changes, obviously, since 1969 to today. And obviously, the topic of today's conversation, when you look at everything that's going on with, omnichannel, kind of the changes that that's bringing, to the forefront of a lot of logistics operations. So let's kind of talk about that now. E-commerce, omnichannel, like I said in my intro, it's really impacting a wide range of industries. So, and you get to work with a lot of companies in a variety of industries. So from your perspective, I mean, how is e-commerce, omnichannel, how is it impacting warehouse operations and labor requirements?
Well, it's really the main reason, in my opinion, there are so many dynamics and growth initiatives in the space right now. And I think we can set the premise for the conversation we're having today around the obvious fact that when you think about e-commerce orders and internet orders, it's a scenario where I'm shipping one item to Adrian's home. If I listen carefully, I might hear the UPS driver ring the doorbell behind you there, where you ordered something online, onesie, twosie types of items, and it's being sent to your home. In most warehouses, they're more equipped to be sending to their larger retailer customers, their manufacturing customers, their own stores. So the facilities are more geared to shipping pallets, cases out for a shipment instead of one or two items in a very small container or even an envelope via UPS or FedEx to your home. It's very labor intensive. And in order to hit the shipping volumes, shipping these onesie twosies compared to shipping out pallets and cases is very, very difficult. It's a very, very labor intensive world today. Most warehouses aren't set up and designed to handle it efficiently. And then top onto the fact that internet orders, you have really no good gauge as to when they're going to come through. So there's a high level of volatility. So you make it labor intensive and then you make it hard to predict. That is why there's a labor opportunity out there in supply chain today.
Now, when one of the things I've seen or have and read and talked to a few, retailers specifically around is, you talked about that transition, right? And particularly from manufacturers, in terms of how they've established their facilities, to be more store centric, if you will, versus, direct to consumer centric. Are you seeing, from a facility standpoint, are you seeing among your customer base, them trying to do both the traditional store replenishment fulfillment operations and e-commerce from the same facility? Are you seeing a move towards dedicated facilities? What are you seeing there?
Believe it or not, I'm seeing both things occur. And I think the reason why customers choose one or the other, it's based on where they currently are from a volume standpoint for e-com, and how does the order fulfillment model of e-com compared to their traditional line of business. So let me give you a few examples. There are scenarios where some of our customers are looking to combine e-com orders with their traditional fulfillment, whether it's going to their own stores or to their external customer base, traditional customer base. And that is because the e-com orders were handled kind of like a skunk works. It was a backroom operation. I mean, literally a backroom operation. Somewhere in the back of the warehouse or in a small outside facility, maybe run by a 3PL, they were doing the e-com orders. And then the volume just exploded. It wasn't scalable. They wanted to bring it into the mainstream because potentially they may have had an effective setup of pick lines and conveyor systems set there where they say, let's try to bring that into the mainstream and do my traditional fulfillment with my e-com. Part of the value of that is I can use a labor force to manage both. So as one line of business ebbs and flows versus the other, I still have the ability to manage my workforce to do both at the same time or put my priorities where I need to. The secondary benefit to that is if you step outside of labor and just look at inventory, The other advantage of running it all in one facility is I can virtually segment my inventory. I won't be forced to physically segment my inventory based on what I think I'm going to sell for my traditional demand versus my e-com demand. So that's one scenario. But with that being said, we also have existing customers and some of hopefully our future customers. They're looking to build brand new facilities dedicated for e-com. Their business is so different and so high volume, or they predict it'll be high volume. They're building new buildings. They're fully automating them to handle that small onesie-twosie, and they're physically putting inventory in those facilities dedicated for the idea that their e-com business is going to consume it. And they are totally fine with the idea of segmenting labor and segmenting inventory because they feel it's the most effective way to satisfy the fulfillment requirements for that business, and they're betting fully on the fact that it's going to continue to grow. So they're ramping up by actually putting new facilities out there. So it's really kind of interesting to see the fact that there's no one answer to all this. The one answer to all of it is people are active, but what they ultimately do could be dramatically different.
Yeah, I think that last point is it hits the nail on the head. I mean, there's not one answer, you know, to this. And I've seen the same thing with companies I talk to. You know, a lot of times it is that, you know, they reach a tipping point, if you will, with volume particularly and activity that leads them in one direction versus another. Now you already kind of touched upon some leading practices here, but just thought, you know, just to kind of expand on that a little bit, you know, when you look across your customer base, and again, retailers, manufacturers, 3PLs that are all kind of wrestling or putting together omnichannel and e-commerce strategies. I mean, what actions are leading companies taking to improve warehouse efficiency and lower overall operational costs?
Well, they're doing a number of things. Our friends in the automation world, they're enjoying an influx of new business too, because there's a lot of people looking to put automation out there. Primarily because when you think about automation, it helps solve the labor problem, doesn't it? I mean, you look at automation, it's moving items via conveyor from one spot to the next. It might be spinning carousels to bring goods to packer. So there's a lot of labor benefits tied around doing that to help alleviate the labor problem. But even with that said, you still have a peripheral of staff around that automation where that has to be managed. And that's where the labor application comes into play, in that it can be used as a tool to not necessarily hold a hammer over somebody's head to make them more effective from a labor standpoint, but help to be used as a tool to better plan and better optimize and better perform within the facility than they could today without those capabilities.
So, you know, you brought up automation, and there's certainly a lot of buzz around automation today, particularly with robots, right? So you saw the Amazon with Kiva from a few years ago, and there seems to be a new story just about every other week about, you know, startup automation companies, robotics companies really focusing on distribution and warehousing environments. I mean, I think it might lead some people to think that automation is kind of a silver bullet solution to, you know, eliminating, labor requirements. I mean, is that the case? I mean, you know, what is the role between, you know, automation and labor? I mean, are we going to get to a point where automation completely eliminates labor requirements?
No, and honestly, that's a conversation we have frequently with our customers and our prospects. Depending on who they talk to first, they may have an automation heavy perspective or a software heavy perspective. The short of it is they can both coexist and they're both necessary. You mentioned the robots and all that. Historically, as I mentioned, automation helps solve the labor problem, but automation historically has been very inflexible. I mean, it's steel screwed into the cement floor. That's my definition of inflexible. You build it to spec, You build it for a certain type of product, a certain size, dimension, a certain weight. And when your business changes, you're kind of out of luck because it doesn't have the ability to react and respond. So this new robot technology has really gone a long way to make that inflexibility go away. So because they don't require inline wires, they don't necessarily require anything to be screwed into the floor per se, there's a movable aspect to it. So it does provide a lot of business value and support notions around concepts like goods to packer. There's a term now being more and more commonly used in the market where they say it's goods to packer. Instead of the picker going to get the goods, the automation brings the goods to the packer, but then the packer takes it from there, puts it in a box, labels it, closes it up, puts a UPS label on it, whatever, gets it out the door. So there is a lot of legitimate value where my friends on the automation side are getting opportunities to bring their products to bear. But when you look at automation, it's what I often like to call islands of automation, islands of processes. If you have a goods to packer operation, there's a whole bunch of people around that area that are unloading trucks, loading trucks, doing cycle counts, replenishing pick locations, putting away pallets, moving cases out of bulk locations, doing the packing, doing the loading, doing quality audits. There's many people around that automation area that can be better optimized with the use of a labor solution. So I like to say the best of both worlds, the best situation is you take the best from both and utilize them both within an operation. And I frequently have these kind of conversations with customers where we're doing this type of planning for these facilities. First, let's understand what you're doing from a process standpoint to make sure from a labor standpoint we can support that, and then talk about how we can be complementary as to what's controlling what's planning what within the facility. Those are very good conversations to have, and at the end of the day, the customer is very comfortable. They're optimizing the automation as well as optimizing their workforce. It's really, you need both.
Great point. I want to dive into a little bit now on warehouse labor management solutions. Before I do that, I just want to remind those of you that are attending live that if you do have a question for Tom, you can do so via the Ask a Question button or the chat feature. So let's talk about warehouse labor management solutions now. And for people who are watching, who may not be familiar with WLM, why don't you briefly tell us a little bit about what it is, and then more importantly, how is it helping companies, execute their omnichannel strategies?
I'd love to. It's much more than just a labor reporting tool. Today's warehouse labor management capabilities are fairly broad and provide a lot of value that our customers can enjoy from. Going from from long-term planning, the ability to use these tools to forecast what labor force might be needed. I mentioned earlier, it's kind of hard to predict. There's some parts of the e-com business that's very volatile, but there's likely tools within the company that are doing demand forecasts, long-term forecasts, progressions against either promotion, new products coming online. This is what I think is going to happen. Labor can be used to play off of those forecasts to do long-term labor planning. How many people do I think I'm going to be needing in a month, 2 months, 3 months from now, next season? Where am I going to get those people from? It allows the logistics side to understand what the business is going to ask from them before the actual orders get dropped. I mean, at that point, you're in reactionary mode. So using labor tools to forecast long-term is one key benefit that many companies often don't realize is out there. Take the next step down, it can also be used for short-term planning. What am I going to need this week? How many people on the receiving dock? How many pickers am I going to need? Because I have a better perspective of the workload for the week, I can now plan down into weekly schedules or specific operations within the facility, what needs to be done, how many people will I need. Then you take it within the shift, and you could do intraday planning and actually say, okay, now the work's at the floor, things happen, things change, people come in, people don't come in, rush orders get dropped, an unexpected truck arrives, how am I doing now? And you have to react to the dynamics that all of a sudden everything that was good to go at 10 o'clock, now at 2 o'clock looks like we got some problems. So the ability to redirect labor to go fight the fires, wherever the fires might be, are some of the capabilities that the product can provide. Now, it certainly provides labor performance tools. It allows you to see, how am I doing? At the warehouse level, so you can compare warehouses to other warehouses, by shift, by team, you know, like what a pick line. Maybe a pick line is picking by paper. You have no technology to really show the 20 people on the line what the individual people are doing, but you can track the team. How are those 20 people as a unit working within that pick area? Because I really don't have any technology in their hands or automation that they're interacting with to get a more granular piece of information on the individual. So we can do team level reporting, and then the ultimate is get down to the user, either with them checking in, checking out work, with voice technology, with radio frequency technology, even with interacting automation like working off of carousels or pick to lights, we can get a picture of what that person is doing. And then with that being said, we could do it one of two ways. We could use high level calculations. What's the units per man hour that person should be doing? Just give me a rough gauge, kind of put my thumb up in the air and say, normally I can do 100 picks an hour. How is that person doing against that rough estimate? The end game though is discrete labor standards, where we break down the tasks, look at time and motion, look at fatigue and delay, look at a variety of ergonomic factors, and come up with a very accurate picture of what that person should be doing, and actually track their performance against an estimation of what it should take to get the work done with normal effort, normal exertion. You're not running around like crazy, putting yourself at risk. You're just putting in a normal amount of effort to get the work done. That is really a great goal for you to go to when you look at labor performance, is go to that level, because with it, you get a very great picture as to your level of performance, where your barriers to productivity might be. I mean, it's not a hammer hanging over the head of the person, either work harder or I'm going to fire you. It's around what's causing that person to get into delays that is affecting his ability to produce. Normally, it's congested aisles or poorly laid out facilities, or his equipment isn't working very well, or it might be a training issue. He's just doing the job wrong. Go out there, reinforce how to do it effectively. People pick up bad habits, you know, that kind of thing. So it's really a great end game from a labor standpoint to get to that. Now, with that being said, labor also provides a couple other things. You could take it to the next level and actually use that information to create an incentive pay program. Our mature labor users out there saying, I've got that benefit, I've gained the benefit from engineered labor standards, now I want to go get a win-win with my users, that if they perform with a little bit extra effort, if they still do the job safely and accurately, and don't put quality or safety at risk, I will share additional money with them because they've actually exceeded the standard for a period of time. And they see that as another uptick of performance, where you could move facilities from, let's say, the high 90% of standard into 110, even pushing towards 120% of standard from an individual workers that are putting in the additional effort. You're sharing money. That's money well spent because you're getting additional benefits from that user or group of users. Last thing I'll call out is, these tools can also be used to do modeling. What if scenarios? What if I went from radio frequency to voice in the case pick line? Is it really going to save me money? Well, why don't we run it in a non-production environment? Let me run last week's work against that, or run, you know, do a standard comparison. How much time am I going to save per task if I go hands-free, eyes-free, voice in a case pick operation with compared to RF? Historically, that'll give you an 8% uptick in productivity because of the changing of technologies. Well, let me prove that out in a modeling program, you know, to do continuous improvement programs against my operation. Where can I squeeze out and more benefits, peel the onion a little bit more around what benefits I can get from a productivity and throughput standpoint. You look at all that, labor is a very comprehensive tool that can provide a lot of benefits to an operation.
You know, those are all great examples, Tom. And to be honest, I probably didn't have the appreciation for kind of the breadth of possible ways that companies can be using warehouse labor management solutions. I always thought of it, primarily as really thinking about it more from the productivity of the individual employee or the teams. But some of these modeling capabilities and what if scenarios and so on and so forth, I think are very, interesting and powerful ways of leveraging these solutions. Are you seeing with all this buzz and activity going around with e-commerce and omnichannel, are you seeing demand for warehouse labor management solutions increasing? I mean, is that a driving factor for, is omnichannel e-commerce driving demand for WLM?
Absolutely, yes. There are a couple of dynamics that are pushing labor forward. One is the labor-intensive nature of omnichannel and e-com is pushing labor. Now, customers will look at, how do I get there in two different ways? They'll say, well, maybe I'll do a standalone labor deployment, just labor, quick, effective, bolted onto what I have, and get the benefits that we were just talking about. The other scenario is they say, well, you know what, I got a legacy WMS out there. That's kind of long in the tooth. That's going to be needed to be changed. Maybe I'll do a WMS labor evaluation and look for both of them to be done together. A big portion of our business here at JDA is the WMS as well as labor. I will tell you that the maturity model for WMS today, many RFPs for WMS ask for labor as part of it. People are there. I mean, in the old days, it was a lot of very specific markets like grocery and certain retail markets that were driving for labor. They understood the value prop, and areas like distribution and manufacturing didn't use it. I think we're past that point where labor is now a mainstream conversation. So that's causing an uptick in labor. But then you put the e-com and business on top of that, as you mentioned, and the labor discussions are exploding.
You know, like I mentioned just a moment ago, I didn't have a full appreciation of the breadth of these solutions. I'm sure that there's probably, misconceptions of what a WLM is and isn't out there. I mean, what do you see as the biggest misconception about warehouse labor management solutions?
Well, there's a few things, and they're honestly based on preconceived notions or biases or just a lack of information as to what labor could be. The first one I'll throw out is the one I kind of referred to earlier, which is, a labor tool is just a hammer to get people fired. I need a labor tool so I can prove to somebody that guy is a jerk and I want him out of the building, so I'm going to fire him. If by contrary, it's really a planning tool and a tool to be used to incent employees and to remove barriers to productivity. I will tell you, I would bet you, at every site we've deployed our labor product, whether I've heard about it or not, there's been a handful of employees that, after it's been implemented, go back to the supervisor and go, see, I told you I was my best worker. Now I can prove it. They're proud of the fact that there's a labor tool out there to support the notion that they're dedicated and working hard. So the first misconception is that it's just a labor tool to get people fired. Just forget about it. There's another misconception that you will hear is engineered standards is just a lazy man's manager. It's making the supervisor's job go away. The standards calculate performance. The guy can sit in his office, do whatever he wants, look at the report, and it'll tell him who's working hard and who's not, and I don't want that. When in fact the tool is actually a very strong part of the supervisor to be able to refine, improve, observe, and with today's technology of being mobile and using iPad technology, they can actually interact with the application while they're out on the floor. There's no requirement with labor tools that you're sitting in the office in a command central UI, like a transportation application or some kind of network modeling tool or what have you. This is a product that allows the manager to do his job better and to actually stay out on the floor and monitor performance while he's out there interacting with the staff. The third one I'll call out is the unions hate labor. We have a very long history with labor facilities. Often labor unions will have engineers on staff that they use to understand what it takes to do a job, whatever. What we found consistently is labor unions embrace the labor tool because they agree it is a common, standard, unbiased way to track performance for a regular effort without exertion to do the job. They will fully agree with that. We'll invite them into the implementation discussions, allow them to review and quote unquote approve the standards we're going to use for every operation, get their buy-in up front, and it's really a win-win-win at that point to say that actually the labor product will help you improve your relations with the union, not destroy them. I mean, those are some of the misconceptions. They're big, they're out there, but I think, you know, with proper explanation and interaction with the customer, you can show how, in fact, those are quite not accurate. In fact, there's a dramatic benefit over all three points.
Yeah, you know, I think I've heard each of those misconceptions over the years from various folks. So I'm glad you brought those up and kind of explained them away, if you will, because I think there is a lot of conversation around WLM from those, you know, perspectives that you brought up. You know, Tom, we're kind of running short on time here, so I'm going to go, you know, right to my last question here, and you know, kind of as a way to wrap up, you know, what questions, if I'm a, you know, supply chain logistics executive, I mean, what questions should I ask myself to determine if, you know, my labor management capabilities are well aligned with my omni-channel strategy?
Well, there's a few things that could be done or need to be done. One basic thing to look at from an executive standpoint, and it's easy for an executive because he plays at the numbers game. I applaud many of our executives on the supply chain side that we're proud to call as customers. They're hands-on. They fully understand the business. But at the end of the day, the execs are overseeing the financial aspects of the business. And if they get the perspective by looking at their financial reports to say, you know, it just looks like we're throwing labor at the problem. We're having higher and higher labor costs, but we're really not seeing an increased level of performance and throughput out of nobody's fault, because as I mentioned at the very beginning, you know, the dynamics of e-com is it's just by nature labor intensive, so I got to throw another 10 people at it, but at the end of the day, I still shipped X amount of goods out like I did 6 months ago. So if they see or get the perspective they're just throwing labor at the problem, that's, I think, a good sign for them to say, let me look at my labor tools, how I look at labor operationally, and potentially there might be an opportunity for us to get value from a labor tool. Another thing they can look at is capital expenditures. Increased dock doors, increased forklifts, again, tied to the user, right? If I've got five more users, they're going to need equipment they need to work with. Am I increasing space in the facility because I need more space for inventory buffers because I can't get the product in and out fast enough? My throughput is suffering. They can look at capital expenditures as another leading indicator that they might benefit from a labor tool, because when I do things more productively, when I do them more efficiently, that facility by default will have a higher level of throughput, or it should. And then the last point I would suggest is, are the logistics guys talking to their sales guys? You know, I like to make a joke, you know, the warehouse guy says, I got some kid up there making a website, all of a sudden I'm getting 500 orders a day of this little stuff. You know, when the heck did this happen? You know, it's a total disconnect between the growth aspirations of the business and the guys that got to get the stuff shipped out the door. So if logistics and sales aren't talking, they can't anticipate these growth plans. Logistics can't prepare for these growth plans. and they're purely in reactionary mode, which means they're going to be working a lot of overtime. They're going to be using a lot of expedited freight to ship things last minute. They're going to be hiring a lot of temporary labor. Performance and quality of effort will suffer because it's a war zone, and for lack of a better way to say it, they're just reacting and responding to whatever drops down in the order file on a day-to-day basis. They need to start talking about, at a more broad level, what's the strategies of the company, and then emulate the effective fulfillment of those strategies with your labor force and your facilities by understanding what the business is trying to accomplish. I would say if they're talking, that's a big win just in itself over many operations I see today, where they don't have a clue what's coming down the pipe.
Tom, great advice and insights. You know, I think that those points you raise, I think are right on target in terms of getting the conversation started internally, in terms of whether they have whether labor management capabilities are truly aligned with what they're trying to accomplish from an omnichannel standpoint. So with that, Tom, like I always say at the end of all my programs, we always manage just to scratch the surface on these topics, but I think we got the nice conversation started here and certainly raised some important points and takeaways for our listeners. So thank you again for making the time to be with us today.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it. It was my pleasure to have the conversation.
Great. And thank you to all of you who joined us live today. We didn't get any questions live, but if you are watching this on demand and you do have a question for Tom, you can find this episode on talkinglogistics.com. And you can post a question or a comment there, and I'm sure Tom will be more than happy to respond via that medium. So with that, thank you again for joining us, and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.
I know.